Welcome to the Building Heroes podcast. My name is Shelby Ruiz, and I am the research associate at Washington State University's Integrated Design and Construction Lab. Thank you for listening. We are coming to you today with Jordan and Derek, and we're going to be talking about some really interesting HVAC solutions, particularly in Washington State, one because that's where we're hailing from. Jordan is coming from Idaho, but we are going to be talking about Washington State Energy Code, the Clean Building Performance Standard, and how that relates to very high efficiency outdoor air systems, or VHE DOAS.
You're listening to the Building Heroes podcast, which stands for Building Healthy, Energy Efficient, and Resilient Occupants, as an educational series. The Building Heroes podcast is proudly sponsored by Better Bricks and was created to help bridge the informational gaps that can occur between industry, academia, and experts in the industry doing this kind of work every single day. This podcast varies in topics per quarter and per year, generally featuring voices of industry experts and thought leaders in the fields of construction, design, technology, specialty trades, and skilled trades, as well as those who work in the humanities, energy efficiency, social science, and policy. We'll be posting two podcasts per quarter in 2024, so please keep an eye out for new episodes highlighting alternative construction approaches, methods, materials, and technologies that will help make our planet, the people on it, and the buildings on it all happier and healthier. If you want to learn more about Better Bricks, you can find them online at betterbricks.com, a commercial resource for energy efficiency. Previously, we focused on the built environment and human interfaces, how people used and interacted with the spaces that they were given. The 2024 podcast series has revolved around new and innovative approaches to the methods, materials, and technologies used in the construction and operation of the built environment. We have an exciting lineup of experts in the industry to discuss these key components of building operations, and we'll have 8 episodes in 2024. The next two episodes that you'll listen to on the Building Heroes podcast are coming to you directly from our sponsoring programs. The Northwest Energy Efficiency Alliance is a key sponsor of the work here that we do at the Integrated Design and Construction Lab, but individually, the programs within the Northwest Energy Efficiency Alliance, such as Better Bricks, High Performance HVAC program, as well as their Extended Motor Products program, have sponsored two episodes that we're going to be posting this summer that are going over a very high efficiency DOAS, or Dedicated Outdoor Air System approach, as well as smart pumps under their Extended Motor Products program. We're excited to talk about these very technical and innovative approaches to building science that is usually behind a wall or on top of a roof and not seen as often as the engagement programs that we might talk about in other episodes.
Hey, thanks, Shelby. Yep, my name is Jordan Pratt. I'm an energy engineer with Energy 350. I'm based out of Boise, Idaho, but Energy 350 is a Portland, Oregon company, and we serve a lot of utilities in the Northwest, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Montana mostly. As an energy consultant, I provide technical guidance to utilities and energy efficiency organizations. For the utilities, I typically work with commercial and industrial building owners and design engineers to help design and select energy efficient technologies and systems. For the regional energy efficiency organizations, I help test the performance of emerging technologies and systems out in the real world. So we try to learn from designers and contractors about some of the unique challenges or barriers to different energy efficient systems, but also to test how those systems actually perform in terms of their energy usage, in terms of their kind of non-energy benefits, how they operate, how they're maintained, how building owners and occupants interact with these systems, and bring those perspectives to the folks influencing energy efficiency programs and market transformation efforts.
Derek, do you want to tell us about what you do?
Yeah, thanks, Shelby. So my name is Derek Larson. I'm a senior associate engineer with McKinstry in our Spokane, Washington office. And I really focus on the design of HVAC systems and the associated control systems, which have a huge impact on the amount of energy that those systems use, specifically for design-build performance contracting. projects, which to boil it down simply just effectively means that there's a guaranteed energy savings component to those construction projects. So obviously energy use, energy savings is a big aspect of every project that we do. Previously, I was an energy engineer also with McKinstry for about 7 years, more on the energy modeling side of things and developing those same energy savings driven projects. And my experience in that role really helped with my understanding of how HVAC systems work, how they use energy, where can we get the most bang for our buck in terms of energy savings. And I think another critical aspect of my role here at McKinstry is really just with the breadth of services that McKinstry offers. So we not only have the engineering expertise to do the design, we have in-house service technicians, commissioning engineers, sheet metal and piping installers. And as we're working through our designs, we can work with all of those individuals and get everyone's perspective. An engineered system always works perfect on paper, but there should be this outside perspective of all these different disciplines and trades that need to touch all of these projects. And then lastly, currently also teach an energy auditing technical elective course at Gonzaga University, which looks at energy using systems in buildings and how we can make them more efficient. So I've been doing that for 6 years, I think, and it's been a really eye-opening experience, you know, getting to teach these concepts to senior level engineering students who might not see HVAC design or building energy use and energy savings as a career choice that they might be interested in.
Thank you for the detailed explanations of what you guys both do. And for our listeners in context, I wanted to bring these two experts onto the show this week, or I guess this season, I suppose, because they both have very practical knowledge and expertise. So we're going to talk about a number of things today, and I'm going to let Derek start by kind of introducing us to the most latest updates to Washington State's Energy Code and the Clean Building Performance Standard legislation that has recently come into effect in the state of Washington. Derek, do you want to start with Energy Code and talk about how things have changed perhaps over the last couple years and where they're going, and then lead us into the Clean Building Performance Standard?
So the Washington State Energy Code, the changes we're seeing were really kind of started more than a few years ago. So I believe it was around the 2015 code cycle that they started to implement certain things that we're now seeing being expanded on and becoming more standard practice. Washington, you know, traditionally, they've wanted to go above and beyond in their energy code, and they've always been fairly strict, and it's probably only going to get more and more strict. So as an example, for the last 7 or 8 years, the Washington State Energy Code's been incorporating some aspects of very high efficiency DOAS systems, specifically the decoupling of ventilation air. And I know we're going to go more in depth on the specific requirements of very high efficiency DOAS systems and what that means and the kind of four central components of it. But when they started implementing the decoupling of ventilation air at that time, I remember it being perceived as a pretty big shift in what the expectations are. This wasn't something anybody was really doing. And there was some pushback, people saying, well, this is going to make construction so expensive, and how could we ever do this? But now that it's been in effect for many years, it's now accepted standard practice. And now with the current code, the big push is to push more and more towards heat pump as our primary heating source. So the DOAS components are being expanded on and being made more restrictive on what you can and can't do to drive further energy savings. And now the heat pumps are coming along in this last version of the code, which just went into effect in March of 2024. So the Clean Building Performance Standard, which was enacted as part of the Clean Buildings Expansion Bill, is going into effect here in a few years. And the general gist of it is that buildings above a certain square footage will start to become penalized if their energy use is above a certain energy use target, which is going to be normalized on a per square foot basis. So it will scale up and down with the building size. Compliance for the larger buildings will be over, I think it's 220,000 square feet. That'll be starting in 2026, but then cascading after that, smaller and smaller buildings are going to have to start complying at a later date. And so with that push, I mean, that's really going to start to put a lot more pressure on building owners to get their energy use in line with those targets. And with that going into effect within the next few years, they really need to start thinking about that today and make those changes today so that when that compliance period starts, they're already there. I think heat pumps and ERVs specifically are going to play a very, very large role in getting the energy use down to those targets.
As Derek mentioned, the clean performance building standards start on their requirements on large buildings, and small to medium buildings won't be required to comply for quite a while. That being said, the overall square footage of commercial buildings that are under 25,000 square feet is a huge number. And many of those buildings have packaged single zone rooftop units, which is some of the least efficient system on the market, many of them being constant volume, lower efficiency gas burners, low efficiency fans, low efficiency DX cooling coils. And so that is a building type that many utilities and regional efficiency organizations are fairly focused on, even though the codes and standards are not going to affect those buildings. They are still extremely important to improve their efficiency. And they're also typically harder to tackle because these smaller businesses don't necessarily have these huge budgets or codes coming down that are requiring them to comply. The VHEDOA's approach is composed of four key concepts: a fully decoupled ventilation and heating and cooling system, a high efficiency heat recovery or energy recovery ventilator with a minimum of 82% sensible recovery. That solution is paired with a high performance variable capacity heat pump system. And the one last or the fourth key concept is a right-sized heating and cooling system, one that is neither oversized or undersized, but just right. There is no exact right size. You know, there's some great load calculation best practices and softwares that can help design engineers correctly size a solution, but it's always a balance between redundancy and cost and many other considerations. The Northwest Energy Efficiency Alliance has done a lot of work with the very high efficiency DOAS concept specifically to help these small to medium buildings meet very high efficiencies at a reasonable cost. That's really what the very high efficiency DOAS concept is tailored to meet, small to medium building types. So maybe I'll take a minute to describe what a dedicated outdoor air system is. It is a flavor of a commercial HVAC system that decouples or separates the ventilation from the primary heating and cooling system. This is in contrast to many traditional mixed air systems like a VAV or packaged single zone rooftop units, which combine the ventilation and primary heating and cooling systems into either a single box or a series of components. But regardless, they are coupled together. They work in conjunction. One of the big benefits of a decoupled system is that these two critical functions are now completely separate and can be controlled flexibly and optimized for energy efficiency. The very high efficiency DOAS concept improves on a typical DOAS by adding extremely high efficiency exhaust air energy recovery to the ventilation system, usually in the form of an energy recovery ventilator or a heat recovery ventilator, HRV, ERV, with a minimum of an 82% sensible recovery. So instead of exhausting warm conditioned building air right out the building, a heat recovery or energy recovery ventilator recaptures some of that heat through either a plate style heat exchanger or a rotary wheel heat exchanger. The VHE DOAS concept also utilizes the most efficient heat pump technology on the market to deliver the heating and cooling functions with low energy. These are oftentimes variable capacity or variable speed systems, variable refrigerant flow, mini splits, air to water heat pumps, heat recovery chillers, but the VHE DOAS concept does focus on electric heat pump systems. This solution has been proven to save on average 69% HVAC energy usage over more than a dozen demonstration projects over the last 5 to 6 years. Being a zonal heating and cooling system, we've also received a lot of feedback from building owners and occupants that the system concept delivers extremely high occupant thermal comfort and indoor air quality. And due to the system providing 100% outside air independently of the heating and cooling system, it also provides excellent flexibility in extreme weather events, extreme hot events or cold events. Also in changing outdoor air quality conditions like wildfires, being able to operate the ventilation and heating and cooling system separately allows ventilation loads to be operated flexibly and deliver a high level of indoor air quality regardless of the situation.
How does this compare to new code minimums? What concerns are there with equipment and equipment sizing? What do we do with redundancy?
So VHE DOAS and Washington State Energy Code minimum for many commercial building types looks pretty similar on the surface. Derek mentioned that Washington State Energy Code now requires in any new building or major renovation, it requires a DOAS with energy recovery. Washington State Energy Code requires a 60% total energy recovery or 68% sensible recovery. The very high efficiency DOAS concept shoots for a minimum of 82% sensible recovery. So quite a bit more aggressive than the Washington Code minimum, but they both require a decoupled system. One key difference between the two, Washington State Energy Code is a code. It is required by law to meet in certain applications. Very high efficiency DOAS concept is more of a stretch performance set of guidelines. So it is intended to be very aggressive, very high efficiency, and is not required by anyone to do. It is a set of best practices that we have found to deliver high levels of efficiency. The other key difference is on the primary heating and cooling system. Washington State Energy Code still allows for different fuel choices and different system concepts. It also has a few different alternative pathways, namely the high performance VAV pathway. And there are also a few building types that it's not required at all. The VHE DOAS concept tends to focus on small to medium buildings, works very well in office buildings and schools and retail and a handful of other kind of similar like commercial applications. But again, it's a set of best practices rather than a code requirement.
The topic of redundancy is ever present anytime we're looking at a heat pump type system, especially in Eastern Washington, where our climate does get fairly cold. We have some areas in Eastern Washington that can get down to minus 15, minus 20 degree outside air temperatures. And if that gets to the point where these heat pumps start to struggle pretty hard to maintain temperature set points, just because the heat pump capacity is going to decrease as those outside air temperatures go down. But that's exactly the opposite of what we want, because as those outside air temperatures go down, we need more capacity. So with redundancy, it's always a challenge. I mean, one option is you just don't provide redundancy. You hope that the heat pump's going to do everything it can. And if there is an event where the heat pump does need to go down, then you just roll out some temporary heating solution, like some space heaters or something similar to that. Alternatively, if you're doing a larger system that might be using a hydronic heat pump chiller, heat recovery chiller, that type of setup, then you could have something like an electric backup boiler in place. Ideally, you're using that very, very rarely, but when you do get those extreme weather conditions, that's when these systems can tend to struggle. But in certain climates where the weather is not as aggressively cold as it might be in some areas of Eastern Washington, like around the Seattle area, where we design to only about a 20 degree outside air temperature, then these heat pumps can theoretically thrive all year. And even if you do get a freak weather event where you get a 10 degree day or a 5 degree day, you still might be okay in that instance.
Yeah. I might want to just respond a little bit to the kind of cold climate, you know, climate zone 5, east of the Cascades discussion mm-hmm. about heat pump technologies. Yeah, it's a great point Derek made about heat pump capacity declining as outside air temperature decreases. And that's when your building load increases. So you have kind of these diverging numbers that you're trying to meet as a design engineer. It's a great point. Modern day variable refrigerant flow systems are getting better and better at providing great levels of capacity in even cold climates. I'm very familiar with my office's VRF system, which off the shelf, you know, 6 years ago, provides over 100% capacity down to 5 degrees, can still provide about 70% capacity down to negative 15 degrees. And being in Portland, like Derek mentioned, west of the Cascade Mountain Range, climate zone 4, you don't even have to worry about it because that is so far below even our 50-year extreme dry bulb temperature that you don't have to worry about it. But when you start getting into Spokane and Boise and these areas where we do occasionally see minus 10, minus 15, those heat pumps can struggle. There are cold climate options on these VRF systems, ones that have flash injection that can have those compressors work even harder to overcome that big lift that they do in extreme cold events. Some cold climate units can operate down to minus 30, which in Spokane and Boise should be no problem. But all HVAC solutions and design engineers need to figure out this challenge, which is, what are we designing to? Are we designing to our ASHRAE 99.6 and just being okay with our systems being a little undersized in a 50-year event? Or are we going to provide N plus one redundancy, you know, if it's a critical application, and have an entire backup system that can meet the load if one goes down? These are economic decisions more so than just comfort situations. But from what we've seen is in the Northwest, even in these colder applications, these heat pump systems can do just fine, even in Idaho and even in Montana in climate zone 6, when we start getting into the negative 20s and negative 30s. That being said, it oftentimes is a good idea to have some type of backup solution and to avoid paying for the most efficient piece of equipment. And having that meet your 50-year load is not the best economic decision, in my opinion. Having a little electric resistance backup or a little natural gas backup, if that is an easy solution, makes a lot more sense when you're sizing for a couple hours a year, or maybe even a few hours every 10 years. So these are design decisions that's why we pay in the McKinstry's of the world to make complicated decisions.
Where usually does that line get drawn in the sand between the most cost-effective decision, the most energy-efficient decision, and designing for those predictable but sometimes unknown circumstances?
Yeah, I can speak to that. We've had a number of instances where we've installed similar systems to very high efficiency DOAS, you know, a lot of VRF systems with DOAS, even if they don't specifically meet the four requirements of VHE DOAS. But cost was often one of the biggest drivers as a pro to installing that kind of system. We've found that these VRF systems can often be pretty cost competitive or potentially significantly lower cost than compared to many other system types out there, like four-pipe fan coils. The fact that these heat pump systems give you your heating and your cooling through the same infrastructure is a very, very big bonus economically from a first cost perspective on these.
Yeah, I know I'm supposed to be the VHE DOAS champion and the VRF champion, but I'll provide some kind of critiques from the market on cost effectiveness. Oftentimes we will get asked, what is the simple payback of a VHE DOAS solution? When we provide the numbers and people are looking at it from the perspective of, if I do nothing and spend all this money for a new system, what will my energy savings will be and how many years will it take to pay back? And the numbers don't look great if you're looking at it with that perspective. But the reality of living in the Northwest and the HVAC costs, HVAC energy usage, and the cost of electricity and natural gas is, if you look at the amount of energy spend that a commercial building has, and even if it's the least efficient system you could do, maybe a constant volume, single zone package rooftop unit, and you say, what is the cost to replace that system for like the cheapest thing I could do? Just swap it out. You take that cost and then you say, what if my HVAC energy use went to zero? I had a infinite efficient system that required no energy use. The simple payback then isn't even attractive. So this is not the way to look at an HVAC project. And it's rarely the way that somebody who does VHE DOAS looks at it. Oftentimes they're looking at it, like Derek mentioned, where we need to do something. We are replacing our HVAC system and we have a suite of options. They have a range of costs and they have a range of expected performance. And we've found that VRF systems with heat recovery are oftentimes one of those best economic values. They have the best net present value is a great way to look at it, because they aren't the most expensive and they oftentimes can provide the absolute lowest energy use. I mentioned 69% average savings across over a dozen projects. Those projects, on average, the commercial projects in Climate Zone 4, so west of the Cascades, it's a subset of those projects, had an average energy use intensity of 11.4 kBTU per square foot per year, which is extremely low. They cost on average $22 per square foot. That is a number that is changing rapidly in the last 5-6 years with inflation and equipment costs and labor costs increasing pretty rapidly. So that is not a number that I would quote as going to happen now and going forward, but that is a real number of total project costs of VRF plus energy recovery. And those two numbers together provide an extremely appealing economic situation compared to anything else on the market.
As far as the concerns go of finding equipment and finding the right equipment, who has that equipment? What are some challenges there and our present solutions?
Great question. As an energy engineer, I sit here and look at the manufacturer websites and find the most efficient piece of equipment I can find that'll work in any climate zone in the Northwest. And then when, you know, Derek might be working with a building owner in Eastern Washington, or maybe, you know, a rural part of Oregon, their local distributors may not have that piece of equipment. They might not have every single product available to them. Sometimes it's difficult to find the equipment that you need to meet a particular solution. Also, the maintenance side of it. This is something we hear a lot from building facilities staff, is that VRF and other high efficiency heat pump solutions, they're a black box in terms of their controls. They don't know how to fix things when something goes wrong, like they know how to fix a boiler or a simple rooftop unit, because it's a system that has proprietary controls. It has refrigerant. It's a complicated system, a decent amount of complexity. And so when things go wrong, if they don't have a technician, either a manufacturer rep or a HVAC service provider that has the ability to work on these systems, it can be a challenge and it's something of a concern.
And I'd like to echo your statement there on the black box nature of the controls, because that's definitely been a sticking point with certain customers of ours. With our customers who have more sophisticated HVAC technicians, I'm thinking university campuses, you know, they have very, very smart HVAC techs, and they tend to not like that black box nature of what's going on. They want to be able to diagnose things with themselves hands-on and fix it that day and get things back up and running. We have found, though, that with the less sophisticated clients, namely like rural towns, school districts, rural cities and counties, they don't necessarily mind that black box nature. They kind of just want something that you just tell it when to run and what set points you want in the system, and you just hit go. But that can still become a problem if there is a maintenance event and that system goes down, and what's the response time, and how long is it going to take to fix it?
Do either of you have any kind of final points to make, things to consider, best practices?
I think the only point that I wanted to bring up that we hadn't discussed yet was on the installation side of things, specifically with larger VRF systems. As Jordan alluded to, VRF can be a little finicky. And when it comes to who's installing that system, you really want a mechanical contractor who knows what they're doing and is trained on the installation of VRF. There are a lot of gotchas and do's and don'ts and things to watch out for with regard to how the piping's installed, you know, what kind of straight length requirements there are between elbows and connection points and things like that. That can be very difficult to address if there's a problem later on, especially if a lot of this piping is covered up within walls and concealed, and how do you get to it after the fact? And so the installation side of things is super critical and making sure that you get a contractor who really knows what they're doing.
That's a good point. One last thing I think I want to mention is that in the world of commercial HVAC, there is no one size fits all solution. There's certainly not a perfect technology or a perfect system. Each building is unique. Each owner's requirements and goals are unique. And that's oftentimes why we want creative design engineers and contractors that are willing to try to meet these unique situations with high efficiency solutions. The VHEDOAS concept is somewhat prescriptive for small to medium buildings because we see that as an area of the market that's somewhat underserved by design engineers. And so in an ideal world, we would have great integrated design teams on every single project coming up with a really good solution, but that's not always the case. And sometimes a simple solution like VHEDOAS, VRF plus high efficiency heat recovery can make a big impact in a lot of building types doing just typical practices. This is what we have seen work. This is a pretty good recipe to follow to get really low energy usage and have extremely high levels of occupant thermal comfort and indoor air quality. You know, would love to see unique and creative solutions in every single building, but oftentimes that's not the best solution. Sometimes the best solution is a proven, straightforward HVAC system that's been done over and over again and shown great results.
Thank you, you two, for being here with us today. Would you both really quickly, just one last time, where people can find you or contact you for reference for the listeners? We will make sure that any link or resource that's mentioned is included in our companion document on our website. Jordan, where can people find out about what you do, Energy 350, and find you online if they have questions?
Yeah, you can learn more about Energy 350 at energy350.com. That's our website. You can find me through our information email there. To learn more about the VHEDOAS approach, you can go to betterbricks.com. You can find a plethora of information about VHEDOAS and other commercial HVAC solutions. There's some great case studies, economic analysis, meta modeling reports, and a whole bunch of data that we've collected over the past 4 to 6 years on very high efficiency DOAS systems out in the real world.
And Derek, where can we learn more about McKinstry, what specifically you do, and where can people get in touch if they have questions?
Yeah, if anybody wants to get in touch, you can connect with me on LinkedIn. And if you want to see what McKinstry's been up to with their recent projects, you can check out our website at www.mckinstry.com.
The Northwest Energy Efficiency Alliance is a key sponsor of the work here that we do at the Integrated Design and Construction Lab, but individually, the programs within the Northwest Energy Efficiency Alliance, such as Better Bricks, High Performance HVAC program, as well as their Extended Motor Products program. You can find Building Heroes on anywhere that you stream podcasts or music, including Apple, Google, Spotify, and you can find us on RSS. All of our companion documents are available to anybody who is listening on our website at idcl.wsu.edu.